Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We have the major oil companies going to Venezuela now, scouting it out and picking their locations.
Under pressure from the United States, Venezuela's interim president, Delcy Rodriguez, has signed a law allowing for the country's oil industry to be privatized. This comes less than a month after the U.S. abducted former President Maduro from power. We'll speak to Pulitzer Prize-winning Latin America historian Greg Grandin. Then families of two Trinidadian men killed on October 14th in a U.S. missile strike in the Caribbean are suing the Trump administration for wrongful death.
It's a criminal offense. You cannot be bombing people boats, you know, like that, you know, on international water and saying narco trafficking and raise your proof.
We'll speak with their attorney, and hundreds of thousands of Haitians are on the verge of losing their status to live and work in the United States legally. President Trump signed an executive order revoking that status early in his second term, despite the well-known conditions of instability and danger in Haiti. We'll hear directly from a healthcare worker in Florida. And finally, to Iran, where the estimated count of the dead from the brutal government crackdown on protests continues to rise, possibly into the tens of thousands. This comes as threats of possible U.S. military action rise. We'll speak with the acclaimed Iranian filmmaker Sepideh Farsi. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Senate Democrats and President Trump have struck a deal that could avert a government shutdown, but the needed votes have not yet been taken. Under the deal, the Senate would approve funding for most government agencies through September 30th, but Department of Homeland Security funding would only continue for two more weeks. Democrats are pushing to place new restrictions on DHS in response to the Trump administration's deadly immigration crackdown in Minnesota and the fatal shootings of Alex Preston and Renee Good. On Thursday, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey addressed the U.S. Conference of Mayors in Washington. He called for a nationwide end to what he called the ICE siege.
Never in a million years did I think that we would be in this place where troops and federal agents by the thousands have been deployed on a great American city, where the Department of Justice is used as a weapon to silence dissent.
On Thursday, Trump's so-called border czar, Tom Homan, who's just been deployed to Minnesota, vowed to continue immigration operations, but said the strategy will shift.
We will conduct targeted enforcement operations. Targeted, what we've done for decades. When we hit the streets, we know exactly who we're looking for. Good idea where we may find them. You have a criminal history. You have their immigration history. A lot of information about this person that we get from numerous databases out there. Targeted, strategic enforcement operations.
President Trump sent Homan to Minnesota to replace Border Patrol Commander Greg Bovino. Homan also said the federal government's working on a drawdown plan in Minnesota. But on Thursday night, President Trump said he's not pulling back from Minnesota. He told reporters, no, no, not at all. He made the comment during the premiere of a new documentary about his wife, Melania Trump. Jeff Bezos's Amazon paid a record $40 million to license the documentary, the highest ever for a documentary. Amazon is spending another $35 million on promotion. One former Amazon executive questioned the spending, telling the New York Times, how can it not be equated with currying favor or an outright bribe, unquote. In other immigration news, on Capitol Hill, more than 60 faith leaders were arrested inside the Hart Senate office building to protest Trump's immigration policies. They carried banners reading, do justice, love, kindness, abolish ICE, unquote. Meanwhile, a coalition of groups has called for a national shutdown today, a week after a general strike was held in Minnesota. Organizers are calling for, quote, no work, no school, no shopping, stop funding ICE, unquote. Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine is claiming ICE has paused its large-scale immigration roundup in the state. Collins said she'd urged Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem to reconsider the operation, dubbed Operation Catch of the Day, that targeted the cities of Portland and Lewiston in Maine, which both have sizable Somali populations. Democratic officials have questioned Senator Collins' claim. A spokesperson for the Maine Democratic Party said, quote, Collins is trying to save face on the same day the Senate is set to vote on a DHS funding bill. She has been leading the charge to pass without a single reform or guardrail to ICE's reckless, dangerous behavior, unquote. The Financial Times reports private companies have reaped $22 billion in contracts with ICE and CBP, Customs and Border Protection, over the past year. Spending by CBP on private contractors increased sevenfold between the first and second half of last year. One gravel company has received more than $6 billion in contracts since July to help build a wall along the southern border. The firm, Fisher Sand and Gravel, is headed by a Trump ally and Republican donor. Private prison companies have also received major contracts. $800 million has gone to the GEO Group and almost $300 million to CoreCivic. The data intelligence firm Palantir has received more than $81 million in ICE contracts since last January. The online news outlet 404 Media recently reported Palantir has developed a new tool to help ICE find neighborhoods to raid. Iran's top diplomat is in Turkey for talks as fear continues to grow the U.S. might soon launch a major attack on Iran. The New York Times reports Trump has been presented in recent days with a, quote, expanded list of potential military options against Iran aimed at doing further damage to the country's nuclear and missile facilities or weakening Iran's supreme leader, unquote. The current options include sending U.S. forces inside Iran to carry out raids. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth spoke during Trump's cabinet meeting Thursday.
Same thing with Iran right now, ensuring that they have all the options to make a deal. They should not pursue nuclear capabilities. We will be prepared to deliver whatever this president expects of the War Department.
Meanwhile, inside Iran, Reuters reports security forces have rounded up thousands of people in an attempt to prevent renewed anti-government protests. According to the U.S.-based human rights activist news agency, over 6,000 protesters were killed since December, but some believe that to be a vast undercount. We'll have more on Iran later in the broadcast with the award-winning Iranian filmmaker Sepideh Farsi. Venezuela's interim president, Delcy Rodriguez, has signed into law a bill to allow for the privatization of Venezuela's oil industry. Soon after the bill was signed, the Trump administration lifted some sanctions on Venezuela, making it easier for U.S. oil companies to buy, sell, and store Venezuelan crude oil.
Your oil company's going to Venezuela now, scouting it out and picking their locations.
On Thursday, President Trump also said he would order Venezuela's commercial airspace to be reopened. The moves come less than a month after the U.S. attacked Venezuela and abducted President Nicolas Maduro and his wife. In related news, Trump's threatening to impose tariffs on any country that sells or provides oil to Cuba as the U.S. intensifies efforts to topple the Cuban government. On Thursday, Trump said, quote, "I think Cuba will not be able to survive," unquote. The Financial Times reports Cuba only has about 15 to 20 days left of oil. The move appears to be intended to put pressure on Mexico, which has been an oil lifeline for Cuba. President Trump's announced Russia will pause attacks on Ukrainian cities for a week due to the, quote, extraordinary cold weather. But Russia has not yet confirmed the claim. In recent weeks, Russia has repeatedly attacked Ukraine's energy infrastructure, leaving Ukrainians without heat or electricity at a time when temperatures are often sub-zero Fahrenheit. Last week, Russia, Ukraine, and the U.S. held trilateral talks in the United Arab Emirates. A former sheriff's deputy in Illinois has been sentenced to 20 years in prison for fatally shooting Sonia Massey, a black mother of two who called 911 herself about a suspected prowler in July 2024. The deputy, Sean Grayson, responded to the 911 call and shot Massey in her own kitchen. He was convicted in October of second-degree murder. Ahead of the sentencing, Massey's mother, Donna Massey, told the court, quote, "Today I'm afraid to call the police in fear I might end up like Sonia," unquote. In economic news, President Trump selected the conservative economist and former Fed governor Kevin Warsh to be the next chair of the Federal Reserve to replace Jerome Powell, whose term ends on May 15th. Warsh served on the Fed's board of governors from 2006 to 2011. And President Trump and two of his sons have sued the Internal Revenue Service and Treasury Department for at least $10 billion over a leak of their tax returns. In 2024, a contractor at the consulting firm Booz Allen Hamilton was sentenced to 5 years in prison for leaking the Trump records to the New York Times and ProPublica. Earlier this week, the Treasury Department canceled all contracts with Booz Allen Hamilton. Both the IRS and Treasury are headed by Trump appointees. In October, Trump demanded the Justice Department pay him $230 million in compensation for the federal probes against him. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show looking at the Trump administration's tightening grip on Latin America and the aftermath of the abduction of the Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and his wife, Celia Flores. On Thursday, Venezuela's interim leader, Delcy Rodriguez, signed a law that'll open Venezuela's oil industry to privatization, reversing a key principle of the Chavista movement that's persevered in Venezuela for more than two decades. This is Delcy Rodriguez speaking from Caracas.
En esta ley está la visión de futuro del presidente Nicolás Maduro.
In this law is President Nicolás Maduro's vision for the future, because there are those who think we pulled this law out of nowhere. No, we had already studied this law, its reform, together with President Maduro. I feel moved to be able to tell him from Caracas, his birthplace, "President Maduro, we are delivering for you. We are delivering for the first combatant, Celia Flores, and we are delivering for the people of Venezuela."
Soon after the legislation was signed, the Trump administration lifted some sanctions on Venezuela to facilitate access to the country's crude oil reserves for U.S. companies to buy, sell, and store. President Trump also said Thursday the United States plans on opening up Venezuela's airspace. Trump spoke following a cabinet meeting yesterday.
"And I just spoke to the president of Venezuela, informed her that we're going to be opening up all commercial airspace over Venezuela. American citizens will be very shortly able to go to Venezuela, and they'll be safe there. We have the major oil companies going to Venezuela now, scouting it out and picking their locations."
This all comes as President Trump Thursday signed an executive order that would impose tariffs on goods from countries that sell or provide oil to Cuba, as Trump intensifies efforts to topple the Cuban government. The move appears to be intended to put pressure on Mexico, which has been an oil lifeline for Cuba, as the island has been devastated by decades of U.S. economic sanctions. Trump said Thursday, quote, "Cuba will not be able to survive," unquote. Meanwhile, the Financial Times reports Cuba only has about 15 to 20 days left of oil. For more on this and other issues, we're joined by Greg Grandin, Yale University history professor, Pulitzer Prize-winning author, whose latest book is America America, A New History of the New World. His recent op-ed in the New York Times headline, "Trump picked the right stage to act out his imperial ambitions." So we last spoke to you, Professor Grandin, when Maduro and his wife were abducted. They're sitting not far from here in a Brooklyn detention center, expected to be in court, I believe, in March. But talk about what's happening now. It surprised many when the Mexican president, Claudia Sheinbaum, announced that Mexico would be cutting off oil supplies, but then she had to clarify her comments. I want to see if we can go to a clip of President Sheinbaum talking about exactly what Mexico would be doing.
It is Mexico's sovereign decision to send humanitarian aid, and Pemex fulfills its obligations under the contract once it ships. I never said it had been suspended. It had not been suspended. That was a later interpretation based on a newspaper article. Therefore, humanitarian aid to Cuba, as to other countries, continues.
So it's not exactly clear what she's saying there, that oil for humanitarian reasons would continue. But if you can explain what's happening and the connection between, it's something you've long said, Venezuela and Cuba, especially U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, the Cuban Americans' complete focus.
Yeah, well, just to put into logic context, I mean, Trump came into power saying, with a kind of buffoonish change of the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, and within a year, he had launched this campaign of chaos and murder in terms of the speedboat operators and pilots, over 100 dead, and then, you know, and then this fast strike into Venezuela, and he built up a military, naval presence in the Caribbean that is still there. It hasn't wound down since the kidnapping of Maduro, so the pressure is still on Venezuela. Because Delcy Rodriguez, as Marco Rubio said the other day, is basically governing under the blade. You know, she could be in fear of, you know, he's basically threatened to take her out if they're not satisfied with the level of cooperation that they're showing.
She's the interim president.
Yeah,
yes, President Trump already tweeted that he was the interim president.
Right.
Trump himself.
Right. So basically what we're seeing is a kind of new form of imperialism where Trump is treating these countries like hostile takeovers, where, you know, whether it be Venezuela, whether it be Gaza, whether it be Haiti, whether it be Libya, these are all kinds of in which these countries go into receivership. And Venezuela, it really is the most striking example because it's a big country. In the past, in the 19th century and early 20th century, the United States would take over the customs house of the Dominican Republic or something like that. But what the United States is planning for Venezuela is basically to run the country as a vassal state, basically giving it an allowance, taking its revenues, approving its budget. The money's going to be deposited in some fund in Qatar. This is an arrangement, with kind of transactional details that we've never seen before. And yes, oil is key to it in terms of isolating Cuba, or oil as a weapon, not oil as profit, oil as a way of isolating Cuba, because Venezuela, in the mind of Marco Rubio and the greater Florida constituency within the Republican coalition, wants the end of the Cuban Revolution. They want regime change in Cuba, and it seems like Trump has openly stated that that's the next goal, and they're putting pressure on Mexico and to cut off oil to Cuba, and it seems like Mexico is caving to that pressure. Whatever Claudia Sheinbaum has said, the fact of the matter is that the Mexican oil has been decreasing, that it's been exporting and transporting reporting to Cuba over the last couple of months. So she's under enormous pressure, and Cuba does have apparently a few weeks without oil, and it has very few friends. Brazil's not helping. Carney in Canada, for all of the strong words in his speech at Davos, they're not saying anything about this action in the Western Hemisphere. It's really criminal. It's a straight out criminal activity.
Why criminal?
Because it's based on no international law. When the United States says that Venezuela has sanctioned oil, that's just the United States asserting it. It's not ratified by any international body.
I wanted to go to new information. The Trump administration reportedly planning to establish a permanent CIA presence on the ground in Venezuela following the abduction of President Maduro. That's according to CNN, which spoke to several anonymous sources that outlined talks between the State Department and the CIA have weighed short and long-term schemes to foster U.S. influence in Venezuela. One source told CNN, quote, state plants the flag, but CIA is really the influence. CIA officers were in Venezuela in the months leading up to the U.S. military strike targeting Maduro and his wife. The agency covertly installed a small team inside Venezuela in August to surveil Maduro, providing key intelligence for the attack on Caracas earlier this month. One CIA source reportedly operated within the Maduro government.
Yeah, well, we could assume that in the Rodriguez government, the CIA is interpenetrated on all levels. I mean, the CIA has a presence in Latin America. That's not new. Every embassy has a CIA staff operating out of the basement office. But this is envisioning an upscaling of the objective of the mission of the CIA. It's basically turning the CIA into a colonial office, you know, how to run an informal empire.
Let's go to Secretary of State Marco Rubio Wednesday, refusing to rule out further U.S. attacks on Venezuela. His threat came during his testimony before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, where he told lawmakers that Venezuela's interim government has agreed to submit a monthly budget to the Trump administration, which will release money from an account funded by oil sales and initially managed by Qatar.
On the third point of use of force, look, the president never rules out his options as commander-in-chief to protect the national interest of the United States. I can tell you right now with full certainty, we are not postured to, nor do we intend or expect to have to take any military action in Venezuela at any time. The only military presence you'll see in Venezuela is our Marine Guards at an embassy.
Greg Randon.
Well, and they haven't drawn down the naval presence with about a tenth of the naval fleet is in the Caribbean, you know, doing, you know, both threatening Mexico, threatening Venezuela, and isolating Cuba. So they have many more ships in the Caribbean than they have in the Persian Gulf, going into Iran. Again, this is a new form of this is some kind of weird hybrid of informal imperial rule. It's kind of like the hostile takeovers of nations and turning them and putting them in receivership, in which the United States takes the power to administer the funds, to run them transactionally, but not take any responsibility. Even the idea of nation building, of course, it's not something that Trump ran on and his base is against. But this really kind of obliterates the idea of national sovereignty and the idea of citizenship. This is turning millions of people, I mean, Venezuela's population, but again, it's not just Venezuela, potentially Cuba, Gaza, Libya, and so on, into dependencies, you know, and a kind of new vassal, kind of techno-vassal imperialism.
I wanted to also ask you a really, really unusual report. Atlantic Magazine recently published an article headlined, MAGA Thinks Maduro Will Prove Trump Won in 2020. The article quotes MyPillow founder Mike Lindell saying, quote, I'm hoping now that Maduro will actually come clean and tell us everything about the machines and how they steal the elections, unquote. Some have speculated Trump could pardon Maduro in exchange for him stating that Venezuela interfered in the 2020 election, even though no evidence of that exists. And it might also explain why when the FBI raided the election office this week in Georgia's Fulton County, seeking computers and ballots related to the 2020 election, inexplicably, the head of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, who would be dealing with international issues, was there.
Yeah, apparently Tulsi Gabbard's going to be in charge of making the case that the 2020 election was rigged, drawing on all sorts of evidence. And there's long been a conspiracy that the voting machines I'm not exactly sure, but there were some Venezuelans that were invested in the company that ran the machines. I don't know the details, but I mean anything could happen. Look, Trump pardoned Juan Orlando Hernandez, who was convicted of drug running. He was former president of Honduras, basically as part of a deal to bring the conservative party in Honduras to power, to overthrow the left. And in alliance, if you read, there's a great op-ed in the New York Times yesterday by Jean Guerrero about basically the MS-13, Trump were acting as election monitors, basically threatening people to vote for the conservative party or be killed.
Who Trump endorsed. And again, right. Just to make that point, just Trump says that Maduro is sitting in this Brooklyn jail because he is a narco trafficker, that President Trump pardoned Juan Orlando Hernandez, the former president of Honduras, who was sentenced to something like 46 years in prison for bringing in 400 tons of drugs into the United States.
So you could imagine, I mean, who knows, but you could imagine some deal being worked out with Maduro where he makes some statement. I mean, the point is just to flood the zone, right, to create confusion, to raise the idea that the election was stolen, and this is a way of setting up to discredit whatever comes in the midterms or whether it comes next presidential elections.
Well, we will continue.
There is one thing: is that the oil wasn't privatized. I do just want to make this point very quickly. The privatization of Venezuela happened in the 1970s, and the law that was passed yesterday doesn't reverse that. What it does is it moves any kind of arbitration to international courts, is what oil companies want, and it gives oil companies greater control over their operations. And it reduces the amount of royalties and taxes that Venezuela would charge on oil, but it doesn't quite privatize oil. Oil remains considered part of Venezuela's national patrimony, so that'll still be a point of contention in future Venezuelan politics.
I want to thank you for being with us, Greg Grandin, Yale University history professor, Pulitzer Prize-winning author. His latest book, America America, A New History of the New World, will link to your piece in the New York Times. Trump picked the right stage to act out his imperial ambitions. Coming up, the families of two Trinidadian men are suing the Trump administration for wrongful death. The men were killed by the U.S. In a military strike that the U.S. Engaged in a boat in the Caribbean. But first up, a premiere of a song by Billy Bragg.
The ghost of Martin Niemöller haunts the halls of history. When they came for the communists, he said, "It's nothing to do with me." When they came for the Democrats, he had nothing to say. And when they came for Jews, he just looked the other way. His silence didn't save him. When they came for him as well, there was no one to speak out for him. Resistance had been quelled. What excuses would you tell yourself if this ever happened to you? Well, I live in a city of heroes. I know what I would do. When they came for the immigrants, I got in their face. When they came for the refugees, I got in their face. When they came for the five-year-olds, I got in their face. When they came to my neighborhood, I just got in their face. They used tear gas and pepper spray against our whistles and our phones.
But in this city of heroes, we will protect our home. When they drag people from
that city of heroes, a tribute to anti-ICE protesters in Minneapolis by the British folk singer Billy Bragg. The song written and released in response to the murder of Alex Preti. In a note accompanying the release, Billy Bragg said, quote, that these crimes can be committed in broad daylight on camera and yet no one's held accountable only adds to the injustice. We'll play more of his song later in the broadcast. This is Democracy.